When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Visit us soon at our new State College location.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.
Here are your hosts, Daniel Gallen and Dustin Hawkinsmith.
Welcome in. It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn State Health. I'm Dustin Hawkinsmith. Daniel Gallen here alongside me. We're breaking down the latest in Penn State football, and it's officially transfer portal season. Mitchell Tinsley was welcomed from Western Kentucky, the wide receiver. Very exciting addition to the wide receiver room. I believe, Daniel, you and Bob covered that ground earlier this week on the Blue White Breakdown. But the latest is, and I suppose it's not a huge surprise, because most of us were probably expecting some kind of movement from Penn State's running back room. But Noah Kane, the veteran, junior, former four-star, looked to be, you know, the future at running back at one point in time, struggled a bit in 2021. Now he's in the transfer portal. We're not sure yet, as we sit here today, where he might be headed, but there are some probably pretty logical destinations. And I'm guessing a lot of programs out there interested in a guy who can grind out yardage and who has a little bit of success on his side.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it was a surprise. We all kind of expected to see some movement from that room, especially when you factor in the two incoming freshmen. You're looking at six scholarship guys for next year, all of whom either have rather extensive experience or have a lot of talent in terms of the freshmen. So, I mean, I think the one thing that might be a little surprising about it is that Noah Kane was probably going to enter next year as a 1A, 1B type back with Kevon Lee. You know, they gave him a lot of opportunities, and it wouldn't have been a surprise if he kind of entered the year as the favorite to be the starter. So you kind of, I guess you read the tea leaves a little bit and kind of what's behind him, what's been pushing him. And I think also given the injuries and just kind of the ineffectiveness, that he probably needs a change of scenery in terms of what he's kind of dealt with. And obviously being hurt isn't directly tied to Penn State, but I do think that if you're here, he spent all of last year rehabbing during the pandemic. This year, James Franklin never said exactly what it was, but he was dealing with something, I think, at the end of September and into October, that sometimes you just need a change, and it's kind of understandable. And of course, we got to make the caveat with this whole running back conversation that, yes, we understand the offensive line was pretty poor this year, and that factors into some of the statistical things, I think, that we'll talk about with Noah Kane, because that's kind of the elephant in the room with anything with the running game, is that the offensive line wasn't good enough to help these running backs who, you know, someone like Noah Kane, who might not be 100%, they weren't doing enough to kind of help him make up for that. So we're just putting that out there now so that we understand that that's a factor in terms of how Noah Kane and these running backs perform this year.
Some Penn State fans need no reminders about the status of this offensive line, but it is a good point that anytime you say a running back is struggling, it is a group unit. You know, there needs to be synergy and rhythm, obviously, in the passing game, but in the running game, you know, these groups need to complement each other. And there wasn't a lot of complimentary football happening there. The offensive line had their struggles, as we all know. And I frankly believe, you know, Noah Kane included, being, you know, somewhere less than 100%. We don't know exactly where, but the running backs weren't good enough to make up for what the offensive line wasn't doing. Sometimes you can have one or the other. You know, if the offensive line is dominant, you can have a group like Penn State had in 2021 and still have some success with them. And sometimes if the running backs are so dominant, you don't necessarily need to blow everybody off the line of scrimmage. So, you know, here we are. I think a remake of the Penn State running game is probably pretty good for all parties. And you think about not a great two-year stretch for Noah Kane for all kinds of reasons. You know, he's a guy who is from the South, from Louisiana, played his high school football at IMG Academy. Sometimes that stuff factors in too, especially, you know, he's making a decision to transfer with, you know, icy snow all over the ground, you know, and maybe there was a little bit of home, you know, trying to get closer to home or get back to warmth, whatever. I mean, who knows where his motivation lies, but the fact does remain that he can still find another gear. You know, we haven't saw what we saw from him in 2019, 2020 is hurt on the first play, drive of the series against Indiana. Pretty clearly wasn't himself this past year for all those reasons that we mentioned. So good fresh start for him. Did look like, by the way, that he had a little bit of extra juice in that bowl game. Like those few weeks did him some good.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the bowl game performance, obviously, in the grand scheme of that game, I think he and Kevon Lee combined for like 11 carries for 73 yards, which is a whole other conversation about play distribution. But both of those running backs looked good, especially after kind of how the season went for them. And I think Noah Kane, 5 carries, 28 yards. There's one run where he got out around the edge. Overall this year, 106 carries, 350 yards. It's only 3.3 yards per carry. He led the team with 4 rushing touchdowns. His receiving did kind of take an uptick. 19 catches, 114 yards, after he was pretty much a non-factor in the passing game as a freshman. And I thought that was a pretty interesting kind of addition to his game. I think he had a long catch and run against Wisconsin. And it was just kind of a thing where his size, I think he was 5'10", 220 pounds, somewhere in there. I did not write that one down. But he was the bigger back and his reputation was kind of running between the tackles. But Penn State had some success this year on kind of the swing pass, get him out in the space in the flat. And then he's one-on-one with a linebacker or a cornerback and he was making things happen. So I think that there were, even though the overall kind of picture wasn't that good this year, there are some little things in his development where if the offensive line was maybe a tick better, or if he was just a bit healthier or hadn't got dinged up, I think it was maybe in the Auburn game because we didn't see him against Villanova the next week. If those things are just a little bit better, maybe it's a completely different type of season for Noah Kane. But it's just kind of, it's one of those things where, given how it started, 84 carries, 443 yards, 8 touchdowns as a freshman. He had the opportunity to be the guy after Journey Brown's medical retirement. That it's just an example of kind of how fragile a lot of these situations can be, especially at a position like running back where the shelf life, I'm sure that he wanted to be 3 and done at Penn State. I'm sure that coming into this year, the goal was to go to have the type of season where you go to the NFL just because of the beating that these guys take. But things just kind of, it's just a very fragile position, and the tiniest little thing can just kind of throw things off for you.
And that's why I do think the more I kind of wrap my head around, you know, Noah Kane, it was a surprise at first because, you know, you look at the rest of the room, and we'll get to the rest of the running back room here in a moment. But there looked to me to be easily 2 guys who, in my mind, were more likely to transfer out just because of circumstance. But they didn't do it. Not yet anyway. You know, Noah Kane, they've been pretty clear that, yes, he is a consistent consumer of yardage, but he's not. He can't be limited to a power back. And I think, you know, he's better in some of these areas when he's healthy, when he's right, when he's rolling. I think the receiving stats are a good indication of that. He's not really a one-trick pony. We just haven't really seen the full skill set of Noah Kane because we just haven't had that opportunity yet. So hopefully he gets that wherever he ends up going. I think he can still be a really good back. I don't think this is a Kenneth Walker III type transfer someplace, but this is a guy who can run for 600 or 700 yards if he stays healthy over the full course of a season. So hoping for the best for him. Let's look at this group that's back now. So Kevon Lee kind of emerged. I think, you know, some would say, I think Bob Flowers was on this train for a while that, you know, his usage, it was a long time coming for him to step into the forefront and be the leader of this position group. So that happened late in the year. I think to some extent, the jury's still out on, okay, what is Kevon Lee's true ceiling? So maybe we find that out in 2022. Devin Ford, you know, he was a guy at one point in time was elevated, I believe, to a five-star recruit. He was certainly a high four-star recruit coming out of Virginia. And you see some electricity when he touches the ball, but not a lot of efficiency in his game. And James Franklin, you know, before last season, talked about consistency a lot with Devin Ford. And that comes to work habit, practice habits, in-game, all those things. And that just hasn't evolved quite yet. He's been buried on the depth chart in that third or fourth range for a couple of years. Kaziah Holmes was more buried on the depth chart than I anticipated he would be. So he was one guy, especially coming from the state of Florida, not getting a lot of work this year, that I thought maybe would be somebody who entertains transfer as well. But this is the group now, and we'll talk about the two guys who both came on campus, Nick Singleton and Katron Allen, here in a second.
When you look at this group, obviously Kevon Lee, I think, enters this offseason as the number one guy. He led the team in rushing, definitely at, I think, 6 foot, 239. But you talked about Noah Cain kind of getting pigeonholed as a power back. I think that Kevon Lee has a little bit more than we give him credit for. I think that when you talk about him, you kind of always talk like, oh, he's going to go between the tackles. He's going to get those runs up the middle. But he did some nice things when he could get to the edge. I know that was kind of a point of contention with trying to bounce things outside, running horizontal instead of vertical. But he could do some things. He had a couple nice catches in the passing game. I think that he could have a very well-rounded type of game moving forward, depending on how this offseason goes. And then I think at this point with Devin Ford, if you get anything out of him, that's great. Whether it's as a kick returner, maybe a change of pace back here or there. It's one of those things where it's unfortunate that the lights never really come on. I remember watching his highlights when he was maybe, I think, probably a sophomore in high school, or I think I was still covering Maryland. So this is like 2016 when he first came on my radar in Northern Virginia. And it was type of thing where it was like, oh, like this is the guy that you really want to keep an eye on. And it's just kind of hasn't really come together. And we'll see when you talk about kind of the profile of guys who might enter the portal. I think going into his senior year, with the way the depth chart looks, it wouldn't be a surprise. But we talked to him after the Michigan State game, and he kind of seemed very kind of in tune with kind of the program and kind of where they were at and kind of the situation. So we'll see. And then I think Kaziah Holmes is definitely the wild card. I feel like he's more of an unknown than the two freshmen coming in, just because we didn't see him at all last year. The impression that I've gotten is that he was really supposed to redshirt in 2020, but that was the plan. But then Journey Brown retires, Noah Cain gets hurt, and then suddenly there's just no depth back there. So I think that he had to play a lot more than they were expecting. And then you kind of come into this year and it's like, okay, now you're going to get that work. And Jaylon Sider talked a lot about trust, and that Kaziah Holmes needs to trust Sider, needs to trust kind of the program and their plan for him. And you know, he's from Florida. I think Jaylon Sider and him, I think their relationship dates back to when Sider was in Florida. So I think that he's someone that it's going to be really interesting to see kind of how he comes along and kind of what he can do after really being behind the scenes. I mean, he wears number 26, obviously, at Penn State for running backs. That's a notable number. But whenever we would go into practice last year, he'd be wearing a scout team number. So there's really no number 26 with that running back room. So I'm pretty intrigued by him, especially because I wasn't covering the team in 2020. So I've never really seen him play extensively in person. So interesting group of three that you have with experience and kind of how it could settle out, what their roles could be. But at the same time, I think Kane's exit really kind of clears the way for these freshmen to kind of have their opportunity to work and compete with Holmes and Ford.
And I think it does offer, you know, to your point, more clarity about what these guys can do and what their role can be right away. Nick Singleton and Katron Allen, you're talking about. Singleton was a five-star from 24/7 Sports. He was a four-star everywhere else, including the 24/7 Sports composite. Katron Allen, four-star. top 120 type player in the country, top 10 running back. Penn State was one of, you know, two or three programs, I believe, to get two top 10 running backs in the same class. So these guys arrive at a pretty good time because this depth chart does need a little bit of a shakeup. It does need, I think Kevon Lee does need to be pressed a little bit right out of the gates. And I think the fact that these guys are enrolling, you know, I've already enrolled in classes. They're on campus now, can start kind of making their presence felt, probably helps the competition in the room. Start with Nick Singleton. He's a really good starting point because he is an outstanding player. From everything I've seen, from mental makeup, as much as you can gauge that from, you know, hearing from others and kind of watching him operate, looks to be a really strong-minded kid. And he looks like he runs with a lot of sort of strength and energy and aggression. And, you know, some of the things and those areas where, you know, you mentioned Kevon Lee having that big frame. He doesn't always run like he's got that big frame. Nick Singleton doesn't have quite as much heft, but I think he runs with more power than Kevon Lee does. I think he's faster. I think he's quicker. Just the bottom line, I think he's a better player right now than Kevon Lee is, just my opinion. It's just a matter of how quickly he's able to work his way up. And then I think Catron Allen, you know, if you could kind of identify a clone all the way down to his high school of Noah Cain, he's a pretty good one, you know, being at 5'10", 220, somebody who can kind of grind out yards. They've got, you know, a couple different backs in this class who should, I think, if not one for sure in my mind, but maybe both of these guys burn their red shirts in 22.
Yeah, I feel like Singleton is going to play, that he's going to be a part of the offense. Just when you look at the numbers, I mean, three running backs is a good place to be. And Devin Ford, kind of a question mark in terms of what you're going to get out of him. And Keziah Holmes, also a wild card. So I think that you can slot in Singleton as kind of a 2B or a 3B going in on the depth chart in terms of competition. So I think with Allen, it will be interesting to see if he is kind of he plays three games, you know, plays in the Ohio game, plays in the Central Michigan game, then maybe makes a cameo somewhere else and they save the fourth game for the bowl. Because it's a thing where when a bigger running back, when you come in and you have that kind of frame, what is that frame actually made of in terms of a size? And I think that we have this conversation more about kind of linemen in terms of their listed numbers and kind of the changing their bodies when they come into college. But at the same time, Catron Allen comes from IMG Academy, which is essentially a college program in terms of how it's run and how things are handled. So I think that does kind of give him a leg up as the season goes on. Maybe he's someone whose role expands a little bit. So it'll be interesting. I think a lot of people are really excited to see Singleton. I'm excited to see Singleton. And I think the fact that both of them are on campus, I think really, really helps in terms of learning the offense and getting their bodies adjusted, because running back is one of those positions where I think if you're a wide receiver, if you're fast, you can kind of carve out a role. You can find some things to do as a freshman, even if your physical development isn't quite there. But running back, unless you're a pure burner, I mean, you're going to have to be ready physically for what's going to happen. So I think that this gives them a leg up. And I think that by the time we're allowed and hopefully allowed into practice or the blue-white game, that we can actually see what we've kind of heard about for so long with these guys.
This is the Blue-White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit us at Curaleaf.com or stop in to see us at any of our locations, including our new State College dispensary located at 1248 South Atherton Street. Let's talk medical marijuana and let our confidence become yours.
So looking back at Penn State's kind of history of having these true freshmen standout running backs, how they've been utilized. So Noah Cain started his freshman year down on the depth chart a little bit. Saquon Barkley, when he began, started his career down on the depth chart a little bit. I think he was second to Akeel Lynch whenever he arrived in whatever that was, 2014?
15.
2015. Keyvan Lee, I don't think it was ideal in 2020 for him to, you know, get as much run as he did, but he kind of shook them. So he started his career down there on the depth chart a little bit. Journey Brown was a little different story because he had to develop. Miles Sanders, it wasn't until his junior year where he really stepped forward. So the point being, my expectation for Singleton would be maybe he's not the starter in week one. There's a little bit of history that says, you know, just because in practice and stuff that your freshman looks like your best back, I think James Franklin needs to see it in games. And I don't blame him for that. But I do expect Singleton maybe to be the number two to Keyvan Lee coming out of camp. But then establishing pretty early in the year that, okay, we can't really keep this guy on the bench. This guy needs to be fed 15 plus times per game. That's my expectation for how things play out. So I wouldn't be surprised at all. He's not the starter, but it becomes pretty clear, just like it was clear with Barkley back in 2015, like, okay, this is the best guy on the depth chart. And maybe he is a transcendent type talent. I think Singleton has that possibility.
Yeah. And I think that we're going to know right away when he's on the field, when he has the ball in his hands. And I think that was the thing last year with Kane that was just kind of baffling to watch, is that it was just kind of 3 yards into the line, not a lot of wiggle, not a lot of bounce, not a lot of explosiveness. And it was just kind of, that's not what we were accustomed to seeing out of him. Whereas with Lee, I mean, for better or worse, with kind of running east-west and the kind of the adventure that would be sometimes, that at least kind of showed that there is, okay, he's got a little wiggle. There is some explosiveness there. And, you know, running back and wide receiver are two of the positions where on the field, you can just kind of see how a guy moves in relation to the rest of the players. And it's kind of like, oh, okay, like this is legit. This is as advertised. So I think we'll know quickly. But kind of a tangent to this too, I mean, the running back position, I feel like more than any other position, is just kind of, it's really weird to manage at the college level because it's such kind of an in-between phase where in high school, a lot of these guys are the guy, they're the best player on their team. So they're going to get the ball all the time. But at the same time, they have NFL aspirations. And as a running back, I mean, you're basically on a pitch count. That there comes a point where the body starts to break down. And so you kind of have to figure out how you navigate those, you know, middle 3 or 4 years. And I think Penn State is aware of kind of keeping guys healthy and kind of trying to get guys into the league fresh. I think Miles Sanders is kind of a good example of the template where it's like, you might sit for 2 years, but you'll have a year where you can be the guy or one of the guys. And look, he was a second round pick. He's had early success. He got into the league fresh, and you could tell that he was kind of a different kind of player. So I think when you look at someone like Devin Ford, who was such a workhorse in high school from such an early age, and it was so clear that he was the guy, that it's something that it's kind of it's a very weird balance for that position. And I think Jaylon Sider knows it. James Franklin knows it. It's kind of a weird management. I think basically like running back more than any other position is that you really, really have to balance. All right, we want to win now, but at the same time, we don't want to burn this kid out, which you see sometimes at other programs.
And I think that is part of their strategy is building a running back group that's a legitimate five deep, where they have a pretty clear cut top three. You know, the challenge this past year, in addition, you know, to that caveat, again, I'll bring it up, that the offensive line didn't do a whole lot of favors to this running back group. But the issue was it was like a big glob of backs, and you couldn't really differentiate who belonged where. You know, who is the number one? If you could ideally, if you could give Keyvan Lee Noah Kane's temperament and approach, he'd be a really, really good back. If you could give Noah Kane, you know, the 2021 version of Noah or Keyvan Lee's spring, that first step, that quickness, he'd be a really, really good back. The problem is you couldn't do those things. You can't create a Frankenstein's monster out of Penn State's spare parts in the backfield. So he ended up with, you know, in my opinion, four guys who were incomplete backs, and almost like an arbitrary way of trying to divvy up who goes where I think you wanted Noah Kane to prove and establish that he was the top guy, because he is the best pure running back of the group, no question. when that didn't happen, I felt like they struggled a little bit to determine, okay, what is the pecking order? I think life is made a lot easier whenever you have some kind of slotted role. At the very least, somebody who you know is your workhorse number one back. Then you can sprinkle in everything else. This is the direction everybody's going in college because of that. I think it's appealing to everyone. It's appealing now, maybe not initially, but it's appealing to high school running backs to know that I'm not going to get run like crazy. A decade ago, it was like, I want the ball 300 times. I want to show the league what I can do. Now it's like you have your Alvin Kamaras of the world where it's like, okay, I don't have to be a starter. You know, if I get 50 touches, I can do this thing. You know, the whole culture has changed. And I think Penn State, for the most part, has really adapted and changed well with it. I honestly just don't think they had the pieces to manage this running back rotation the way they wanted to last year.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where someone like Catron Allen is interesting, because he was at IMG so for the past couple of years. So he's already been playing in a timeshare. That he hasn't been the guy. I forget exactly what his timeline was, but when there's a year in Virginia before he went to IMG where he was the guy. He was, you know, the number one, the bell cow, the workhorse, whatever kind of farm metaphor you want to use there. But when he went to IMG, he was splitting time with other 4 and 5 stars. And so I think that he's someone that can come in with kind of the approach, you know, knowing how this works, knowing how the competition works, which I think will be, that's kind of an interesting subplot there in terms of him coming in.
Let's look quickly at the rest of these early enrollees. Both the running backs are there already. You got both the quarterbacks on campus, Drew Aller and Bo Probola. Two wide receivers, Caden Saunders and Amari Evans. So right there, you've got skill position / quarterback as 6 of the 9 who are on campus. Then you might as well throw in Jerry Cross in that, the tight end from Wisconsin. The Lackawanna College offensive lineman, J.B. Nelson, is on campus. And one defender out of 9. So you got 8 offensive guys, 1 defender. Zane Durant, the defensive tackle from Florida, who's got a little bit of development ahead of him to try to build into a college-level defensive tackle. Cam Miller initially was going to enroll and opted not to. He's going to play in, I think, the Polynesian Bowl here later this month. So you got 9 guys on campus. That's another shift in college football culture where that number seems to grow every year. But you have a lot of guys, from my viewpoint, who can really benefit, maybe not in terms of, oh, he's going to play in 2022 because he enrolled in January, but guys who can really benefit from that extra time.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that Zane Durant is probably the biggest in terms of getting here early and beginning that development, just because I think I've mentioned it before that the trenches, that's where you have kind of the biggest development curve, unless you're one of these just insanely blessed, physically gifted 5 stars who can come in and just play from day one. So I think that Durant is someone who will benefit a lot from getting into the strength program. Defensive tackle, obviously a position with some uncertainty. PJ Mustipher is back. They did lose 2 kind of bottom of the depth chart guys, with Aeneas Hawkins ending his football career, and then Joseph Darkwa entering the transfer portal. Neither of those guys played last year, but those are still 2 scholarship guys that fill in the bottom of the depth chart. And as we all know, there can be a lot of injuries that can happen pretty quickly. So I think Zane Durant getting here early, that's good. Similar with J.B. Nelson, but of course he already has the 2 years of experience at Lackawanna. I think he's tweeted about kind of how much weight he's lost and how his body has changed during those 2 years after coming out of Mount Lebanon in Western PA, Class 6A champs this year. And so I think that Nelson is kind of someone to watch. I think the indications are he could compete at guard, and Penn State could potentially have 3 open offensive line slots to compete for this year, including both guards, depending on what Mike Miranda does. That's one decision that is still kind of looming out there. And then whether Juice Scruggs is the center of the future or a guard, but probably the center based on what we saw down the stretch. So I think Nelson and Durant, those are kind of the positions where physically you want to get those guys on campus. And then Jerry Cross, similar, just because of his body type. And he's also someone where he doesn't need to play right away. With Brenton Strange, Theo Johnson, Tyler Warren, all projected to be back, and then Khalil Dinkins finishing up his redshirt year. So I think that Cross will probably be on kind of that Warren and Dinkins trajectory where you redshirt that first year. And then maybe in the second year, your role kind of expands a little bit. So I think that those are the guys that kind of need the most physical development. And then for the rest of them, it's obviously you get the physical development, but with the skill position players, I think it's a lot more of the playbook, knowing where you need to be, getting the reps, making the adjustment to the speed of the game. I think that that's where you'll see kind of the biggest curve in terms of those guys.
And just the, you know, my last point, I guess, would just be with these wide receivers, Caden Saunders and Amari Evans. You're looking at guys who, as they are on campus now, are probably both sub 4.4 guys in the 40 now. And maybe, you know, depending on where you look, it's kind of significantly below sub 4.4. So adding a little jolt of speed, you know, Caden Saunders, I think, is much more prepared to play immediately. So he's going to be a really interesting name to follow in that wide receiver depth chart, because Parker Washington, I believe, is your rock solid number one. But it's like Mitchell Tinsley, you know, I'm really curious, are we looking at him as a number three or a guy who can push Parker Washington? I mean, nothing would really surprise me considering he went for 1,400 plus yards coming out of Western Kentucky last year. I mean, he looks pretty legit to me. So you have a couple guys there. You've got Keandre Lambert-Smith back. Yeah, I got Malik Mega, who could maybe make that leap. And then you've got Caden Saunders, I think, maybe pushing there. And I think his skill set, super interesting for that slot position. So he'll be one to watch too. But I think adding that speed with both of them, it can only help try to threaten opposing defenses.
I wouldn't be surprised if Caden Saunders was the number four wide receiver this year, behind Washington, Lambert-Smith, and Tinsley. Obviously, there's a lot of other guys on that depth chart. I am curious with Harrison Wallace, the third. They've talked a lot about his athletic tools and kind of what's the next step for him. And a similar thing with Liam Clifford. But in terms of the other guys on the roster, I mean, Malik Mega is someone where I like him. He was a great interview. I like the tools and kind of that he passes the eye test 100%. But at the same time, there's kind of, it's a lot still projection with him. It's still kind of, yeah, he can be the next guy. He can be the next guy. And I think that he was someone worth the bowl game. We were expecting a lot out of. Obviously, the whole offense didn't play well. So, you know, he didn't necessarily get his chances. But I think that Mega is still it's a pretty big question mark at that position, where I think you only have three guys that you feel really confident rolling out there in Washington, Lambert-Smith, and now Tinsley. So I think Saunders really has a chance to move up the depth chart. There's a reason he was a top 100 recruit, a pretty highly regarded 4-star by a lot of the services. So I think he'll have kind of the chance of these offensive skill position guys. I think outside of Singleton, Saunders will have the chance to do kind of the most early contribution.
And my thought was, he said the coaching staff compared him to KJ Hamler. I think he's somewhere between KJ Hamler and Parker Washington in terms of his skills. You know, I think he's a little bit more durable. His build anyway is more durable than KJ Hamler, who was pretty spindly coming out of high school. Kind of, he just looks like he's got an idea out there. And, you know, you talk about Malik Mega, and, you know, that's been the development, is not his size or speed, because he's got that unique package at 6'4" and runs, you know, I don't know what his 40 is, but run is a super fast guy too. Having him process the game and see the game and have instincts for it and read things correctly, that's one area where Caden Saunders looks to be pretty far ahead of the game.
Yeah, and I think with Saunders, it's definitely kind of the first kind of ready-to-go wide receiver that they've brought in, probably since Parker Washington. You look at Mega, I mean, that class had Washington, Lambert-Smith, Mega, and Jaden Dotton, where Mega and Dotton were both kind of, they were developmental guys. And then Lambert-Smith, I think, was kind of he was on the borderline between contributing right away versus being a developmental guy. And he had a very solid freshman year, and then Washington came in ready to go. And then this past year, Harrison Wallace is kind of he was a developmental guy. And then I think Liam Clifford was similar in that, in getting up to speed. So you look at, you know, the six wide, obviously maybe Lonnie White would have been ready to go from day one last year if he would have signed and not gone to play baseball. But you look at it, and that's six wide receivers in two classes, and only one of them was kind of explicitly like, all right, like he's ready from day one. And so I think that it's good that Penn State is bringing in someone like Saunders, who is in that ready to go from day one kind of perspective. And maybe Omari Evans can find his way onto the field simply because of that speed. Put him in for four snaps a game, line him up out wide, and just tell him to run deep and make a safety chase him. That might be a viable strategy for Mike Yurcich. But I think that Saunders is someone who, because he committed so early, because he was kind of, you know, I don't want to say stuck in like that four-star purgatory, but like there is something about simply being a four-star, even if it's higher, that it's not quite that, you know, he didn't have one recruiting service rank him as a five-star like Denai Dennis Sutton did. He kind of was on that borderline. So I think that he's someone who, just based on timing and kind of that kind of hype, doesn't necessarily have kind of the same, I guess, hype behind him coming in. But I think that he's someone who could end up being a really big factor for this offense in the fall.
By my vantage point here, I've got four guys who are capable of playing day one. Caden Saunders, JB Nelson, of all things work out, both the running backs, and then a fifth would be Drew Aller, who I think a lot of Penn State fans will be screaming for him to play day one, depending on how things go. But it'll be interesting to see. I think the whole quarterback conversation is probably a podcast of its own. But so
I think the quarterback conversation can be every podcast in March and April for us, and maybe in August too.
Let's jot it down. Let's plan for it. There you go. We're gonna talk non-quarterbacks for the next 2 months, and so then it's quarterback season after that. So we'll keep an eye on that. Definitely want to keep an eye on what Drew Aller is doing and how the coaching staff talks about him and how new strength staff talks about him and things like that. So we'll be following along with that all through. We're gonna look ahead to the next signing day, and there's gonna be a lot of transfer portal updates, I'm sure, coming soon. We'll stay up to date here on the Blue White Breakdown. That's Daniel Gallen. I'm Dustin Hawkins. Make sure you follow Daniel at Daniel JT Gallen. Check us out on PennLive.com and locate all of our Blue White Breakdown podcasts on Alexa, Apple, Google, Spotify, and Stitcher. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.